I'm Justin Cox. This is And the Pitch. It's October 29th, and we're in Philadelphia at Game 5 of the 2008 World Series. The Phillies are up 3-1 on the Rays, who were blessed with a championship appearance after repenting and dropping the devil from their name. A gnarly storm shut down the game in the middle of the 6th inning 2 days earlier, so today's action started in the bottom of the 6th, which is bizarre. It's an 0-2 count with 2 outs in the 9th inning, and the Phillies are up by 1. The closer is Brad Lidge at his peak. In the dugout awaits a large, furry, green, bipedal, flightless bird with an extendable tongue. The Philly fanatic looks on as Lidge winds up.
Well, I'm running down the road trying to loosen my load. I got 7 women on my mind. 4 that wanna own me, 2 that wanna stone me, 1 said she's a friend of mine. Take it easy.
Welcome, Tom Burgoyne. Best friend of the Philly fanatic. How you doing, Tom?
I'm doing great, Justin. I'm so happy to be with you.
I'm so happy you're here too. We'll get to our sort of connecting story that happened about a year ago with Jackson Brown in a little bit, I'm sure. But this ball leaves Brad Lidge's hand, and what happens next? And where are you, or where is the fanatic?
Where am I? Well, because the fanatic is my best friend, Justin, you know, we're very, very close. So that means I was in the Phillies dugout, and a dream come true, you know, for a lifetime Phillies fan to be in the dugout, 2 strikes, the strike or the pitch is made. Eric Hinsky strikes out. Brad Lidge finishes his perfect season, and then Philadelphia literally explodes. And what's happening in front of me is manager Charlie Manuel and all his coaches are hugging. Of course, the fanatic is trying to get past this massive, heavy set coaches, you know, taking up.
Hey, I don't know if the fanatic's in a position to be calling people heavy
set. That's right. Yeah, he had to kind of, you know, slide past them with this banner that he had in his hands, you know, proclaiming the World Series, and went out onto the field, and just with the fireworks going, looked all around and literally passed out, just collapsed onto the field as all the players are, you know, piling on at the pitcher's mound. And it was just what a moment. It was the Phillies' first World Series win since 1980, only the second one in the history of the franchise. It started in 1883. So it was just awesome.
Yeah, that really kind of stuff is crazy because the Phillies are such an important team throughout baseball history. But then you're like, in my 38-year life, like the Marlins win 2 of them. You know,
I know. And that drives me crazy, Justin. They've been around since 1993 and they've already won, you know, 2. And we've been around since 1883 and we've only won 2. So, yeah, that's not right. It's not right.
So something I read about this that kind of figures into this is that when the Phillies, when Brad Lidge strikes out Hinsky there and they win the World Series, that's the first time a Florida team had ever lost a playoff series. The Marlins won all their series and won both those World Series. And up to that point, the Rays had 2. That's the first series lost by a Florida team in the playoffs.
Wow. You know, I never thought of that, but you're right. How about that?
That's crazy. That's just totally crazy. Huh. Kind of speaks to that point. All right. So I love that the fanatic ends up out laid out on the field, because I feel like in like the YouTube stuff I've watched of the fanatic, he spends a fair amount of time on the ground.
Yeah, it's my only skill, I think, is I know how to fall down. That's about it, you know. But no, I mean, Justin, I tell you, it was so crazy. And then of course, you know, the stage is set up and. You know, as they're setting up the stage, so the, you know, players and, you know, the trophy gets presented. They handed the fanatic the actual banner that said 2008, the one that actually now flies over the stadium. It was on a huge, you know, it's one of these big banners. It was on a really big flagpole. And I started, you know, waving it back and forth, but got a little tired and I handed it off to Ryan Howard. And Ryan Howard, with all of the teammates around him, then took it and did a lap around the field. And, you know, so then by the time they were done their lap, that's when the, you know, kind of the awards started. And, you know, again, just great. And then, of course, the celebration spills into the locker room. I, you know, was in there, you know, getting doused with champagne and Budweiser's, and just a really special moment for a kid who grew up a Philly sports fan.
Does the Fanatic partake in champagne? And if so, like, what's the orifice? Where's it go?
Well, he's a big milk drinker, Justin. You know, he's a milk guy. Yeah, he doesn't do too much of the champagne, but yeah, right through the snout, the milk goes right through.
Awesome. All right. Yeah, you mentioned Howard. Like, in reading back about this game and this series and this pitch and everything, there's like certain teams like throughout like baseball that just kind of like effortlessly have an identity. And like, I can just vividly remember Utley, Howard, Rollins, Worth, Victorino, Hamels. Like, that team was they were so good and so like the Phillies. Like, the Phillies had like very much this identity.
Yeah, no question. And you talk about those three guys, our infield, you know, really could be considered the three best at our position, you know, at their positions in Philadelphia history. I mean, you look at Rollins, who was an MVP. Of course, Larry Boa, you know, is right up there in that conversation. But Rollins, you know, probably tops Larry, you know. And then you have Chase Utley, who I think is the best second baseman in our team history. And then Howard, who, you know, unfortunately, his career was, you know, cut down by injuries. But up until that point, was one of the really just the premier power hitters in all baseball, and really just had such an impact on that team. You know, Pete Rose, of course, was with us for some, you know, for a few years. And of course, Pete, you know, has got to be considered in there. But really, those three guys, Justin, were really just considered such the core group and really some all-time Philly players.
So tell us about this, how this game plays out. Like, I remember it now, but didn't remember when you and I were initially talking that this game was split in yes. between a couple of days. So how does this play out? And how does this play out from the perspective of the Fanatic living through it?
Yeah, well, you know, we won game one in Tampa, lost game two down there, but then came back and won games three and four. So now it's game five. And the weather of game three was really dicey, but game five was just looking like, boy, this is going to be a mess. And, you know, they get the game started and then the rain starts coming down. And you mentioned the Fanatic. I just wish, Justin, somebody had a camera and could capture this moment when I'm getting ready to go out with the Fanatic, of course, my best friend, but we were going to shoot t-shirts on the you know, into the crowd in the after the fifth inning. And so there's a tunnel that leads up behind home plate, and at the bottom of the steps is this little dirt room. The ground crew keeps all their rakes and things. And there's a piece of equipment in there that tracks the weather. It's a very serious radar system. And so there I am in costume. You know, you got the Philly Fanatic looking at the radar. And next to me is our grounds crew guy, Bud Selig, and Bud Selig's right-hand man. And I just wish somebody was there with a camera to snap that picture.
Just a couple, just a few real professionals right there surveying the weather.
Oh, my gosh. So that, you know, so what happened was the Phillies were winning 2-0. And then in the top of the sixth, Tampa ties the score 2-2, and that's when Bud Selig suspends the game, which, you know, yeah, you don't. And now, if it was a regular season game, obviously the game would have been over, that the Phillies would have won at the end of the fifth inning, but they did tie the score. And so they waited 2 days. The following day, it was still raining. So it was a 2-day rain delay when the game resumed in the bottom of the sixth inning, on October 29th. And it's just a crazy, crazy scene. I mean, and you mentioned, Justin, that you forgot about it. And it's interesting because to me, it's one of the more unique endings to a World Series ever. I get the sense, like, if it was New York, like if it was the Yankees and this happened, you know, it would go down and, yep. you know, in sports lore, you know, is one of the great, crazy, you know, game fives. But in any event, it was crazy. And I'll you know, the anticipation and the buildup to know, if you're a fan, Justin, you're going to go to the game. The game's going to start in the bottom of the sixth inning. It's game five. It's a clinching game. There was some discussion who's going to lead off. It wound up being Jeff Jenkins because he was a pinch hitter, but nobody knew who was going to lead off. But even before that, you know, I go out onto the field. You know, I'm sorry, the Fanatic goes out on the field on his red ATV. you know, there's not an empty seat. Everybody, of course, redeemed their tickets. You know, you're not going to go to, you know, two nights prior and then not go to the, you know, the resumption of the game. And I just remember the electricity in that ballpark. The people were just out of their minds, and Jenkins leads off with a double, and it might have been the loudest, you know, that park has ever been. I mean, it just was electric.
Can't imagine. I mean, you're sitting there with three innings left to play to win a World Series, and you got to bottle that up for 2 days and just like watch the weather get even worse. Like I couldn't, and you're totally right. Like that, there would be more lore to it. And if it was my own team, I would be singed into my brain, that feeling. And it's funny, I remember like, it wasn't even multiple days, but when the Cubs beat the Indians, they had that like weird delay going into extra innings or something.
That's right.
That's literally like an hour or something like that. This one is multiple days.
I know.
Pretty wild. And the thing is like Phillies fans, or actually Philadelphia sports fans, have this kind of reputation about them anyways, this kind of intensity. And I don't know how much of it's accurate, but from a distance, that's their reputation. So take that, bottle that all up for 2 days and just wait to go play out the final three innings of a game and lead it off with a double and then finally win it. That place had to have gone completely crazy.
It was. And those 2.5 innings or whatever were really exciting in that. Yeah, we took the lead there in the bottom of the sixth. Tampa Bay comes back and ties it in the seventh. In the eighth inning, they have a chance to go ahead, but Chase Utley makes that play where he gets a ground ball hit to him. He fakes a throw to first base. Guy on third base, I forget who the runner was, rounds third, and Utley, after faking to first, throws the guy out at the plate. And then the Phillies come back, go with the take the lead, the go-ahead run, and then Lidge I think with a runner on, you know, he strikes out. He had a perfect season that year, Justin. He went 48 or 49 and 0 in save situations.
That was a fun thing to remember, like how great Brad Lidge was at that time. Yeah. And as someone who followed like the Gagne perfect year, there's a real snowballing excitement to that with a closer. You know, it's like such a unique position, and what a cool way to end that. Especially because I unfairly, one of the pitches that I want to do, I'm glad we're doing this one, because one of the pitches I want to do is Albert Pujols absolutely blowing up Brad Lidge on that one pitch.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. And we got the good Brad Lidge, and he's a great guy too, Justin. He's one of the great guys I've encountered in baseball. I mean, no doubt about it. Just a great, great guy.
Yeah, that's cool. What's funny, what this reading up on this rainout and stuff reminded me of this time I played on a little league team. Like I remember my dad was a manager, I played with my brother and friends and stuff. And we had a game get like cut short for darkness. And so then the next time we played that same team, we had to finish that game, which was like in extra innings and our team was up or whatever. And I remember the guy who was coming up to bat on our team was good. And my dad saying, just no matter what happens, regardless, just swing at the first pitch. And he swings at the first pitch and sends it under the pitcher's legs and then under the center fielder's legs. And we win the game. The Little League game got played out in one pitch. And then you just like clear the slate and play the next game.
That's classic.
It was so like good managerial decision there, Dad.
Absolutely.
So Wikipedia describes the Fanatic as a large, furry, green, bipedal, flightless bird with an extendable tongue. I love that. There's no question.
With a bad case of body odor.
Yeah, I gotta imagine when the weather's not good out there and stuff like that, the Fanatic is taking on some stench and.
Yeah, a little ripe. But you know, he's from the Galapagos Island, so he's very used to the tropical weather and the humid Philadelphia weather. That's for sure.
I did not know the Fanatic was from the Galapagos Islands. Yeah. I did. My wife's from Ecuador, or family's Ecuadorian, and I spent my honeymoon in the Galapagos Islands.
Wow, is that right? Oh my gosh, Justin, that's crazy. We have too much in common, I think.
I know. I saw a lot of finches and blue-footed
boobies. Yeah, the blue-footed boobies. I've been over there twice, and it's a magical place. Just unbelievable. The first time I went over, and of course we brought the Fanatic over there, and I had my family with me, and we were there to shoot scenes of this little movie I put together about the fanatic was time traveling, and he wanted to go back to the day he was born in the Galapagos Islands. It basically was my way of, you know, kind of weaseling a free trip to the Galapagos Islands through the Phillies, you know.
Good job.
Yeah. I thought that was it was a veteran move, you know, but I'll never forget the first day we were filming. You know, we lived on the boat for a week, and you bounce around to the different islands. And with some of those islands, as you know, you have to take the their water landings, you know, so you go into one of those little rafts. And I got the costume bag with me and my kids and the camera crews, you know, two guys. But we get off on the beach, and there's sea lions everywhere. They're everywhere. And so I had to go into like the mangroves and put the costume on, you know, and I remember looking out, you know, like through the mangroves out to this beach. And I'm just thinking, you know, Charles Darwin is probably rolling over in his grave right now because, you know, and not only that, but these sea lions, you know, they're untouched by human, you know, humans. I mean, they have no fear of humans, but when the fanatic came walking out of those mangroves and they took a load of the fanatic, it's like, well, we're making history here. You know, they've never seen anything like this before. You know,
those sea lions are telling that story now.
They are. Oh, for sure. Yeah. We saw this green furry creature emerge from the mangroves.
I love it. So, all right. So in the whole time that Tom Burgoyne has been best friends with the fanatic, no Phillies championships until this one. What's the sort of celebration and parade and everything that follows? What's the fanatic up to in that?
Well, I grew up such a huge Philadelphia sports fan, like really crazy. Like I was the kid and, you know, growing up that everybody knew, oh yeah, Tom, you know, he loves the Sixers, Flyers, Phillies, Eagles. Dr. J was my favorite athlete of all time. I had every poster, every magazine, you know, I collected all the stuff. And of course a huge Phillies fan. And so in 1980, when the Phillies won the World Series, I cut school. I got a couple of guys. We went down to Center City, Philadelphia, where, you know, the parade's going to be down Broad Street. There was a statue there. My friends and I climbed the statue, and the parade goes by, and, you know, going nuts, and, you know, millions of people. And I knew in 2008, you know, oh my gosh, like, you know, I knew I was going to get a ring, Justin. You know, our Phillies organization's great. We all, you know, the front office all were, you know, going to get championship rings. I knew that was coming. But for me, the win meant there's going to be a parade and I'm going to be part of it. And it just was just spectacular. You know, the fanatic was in the lead truck. And, you know, I was up there for 3.5 hours leading this parade, just in, you know, they've said there could have been 1.5 to 2 million people along Broad Street. And, it just was, the greatest moment of my professional career, I guess, you know, just awesome.
Yeah. That's the perfect kind of release for that kind of thing.
And I'll tell you, Justin, you know, the way I got the job, going back to that is, I auditioned and interviewed for the backup role. The main performer was Dave Raymond, who was the original fanatic. And they needed somebody to handle a lot of the outside appearances. And so I went in and I got very lucky. I found one ad that said mascots wanted. I had just graduated from Drexel in Philadelphia, and I was had a job in sales, and I wasn't selling much. And so I, you know, I saw this ad, and I'm like, oh, you know, I was a mascot in high school. So I send this thing in, and 2 weeks later, I get a call from the Phillies. You know, they're looking for the fanatic, which, you know, I just couldn't believe it. Like, are you kidding me? So I went down to audition and interview. And in the interview, I actually brought a picture of me on top of that statue that ran in the Philadelphia Inquirer. It was an 8x10 color picture because they had a little booklet about the 1980 run that the Phillies had. And on the back page was me and my friends on top of this statue at the parade. I brought all this just to show them what a fan I was. They videotaped about 10 of the applicants, and they didn't know who was in the costume. And then they reviewed the videos and they chose me. But and they're like, oh, that's that crazy, you know, sports nut. But in any event, I brought that picture. So now it's fast forward to 2008, And I'm leading the parade, and I look over at that statue, and there are a bunch of kids up, you know, on top of it, and you know, they're waving, and I'm waving back, and now I'm on the other end of it. So it was such an outer body experience. I can't even explain how cool it was.
I like the idea of thinking of an outer body experience for a fanatic, yeah. And also Tom Burgoyne, and you know, there's a lot.
It's very confusing.
There's a lot there to unpack. Yeah, a thing that I read is that I think the prior fanatic was left-handed and you're right-handed. Is that true?
Yeah, that's right. That is exactly right. So that was one of the differences. You know, I'd worked with Dave for about 5 years and, you know, felt pretty comfortable after he left, to take over all the games. And but that was the one thing that, you know, people who were really aficionados of the fanatic and, you know, did pick that up. Like, hey, I thought the fanatic was left-handed, but now he's right-handed. So.
Well, I love that window into the hiring process for a mascot. That makes total sense. Like, blindly just judge it that way.
Yeah. And you know what? One of the key parts to it. So, you know, I was interviewed by this panel of people and funny questions too. Like, you know, what's your favorite cartoon and what kind of music do you listen to? What's your favorite movie? And I'm like, okay, is it Animal House or Caddyshack? You know, it's I'm back and forth. Like, this isn't an IBM interview, you know? I tell people, usually when you go to an interview, they're trying to weed out the biggest idiot. But in this case, they're actually looking to hire the biggest idiot. So I knew I had a chance, you know. But the weird thing, what they made me do was actually dance without the costume on, dance in front of this, you know, panel of people. And that was weird. You know, I remember it was Sam Cooke's Twisting the Night Away. And I remember, you know, one of the people who was interviewing me, I grabbed her and we're dancing. So, and then, you know, I had to put the costume on and they role played actually. It was like, hey, fanatic, you know, Mike Schmidt just hit a home run. How do you feel? So you had to kind of convey happiness. And, the one woman walked across the floor and she pretended to be pregnant. Oh, fanatic, I'm, you know, 9 months pregnant. And, you know, the fanatic, you know, jut out my belly and walk behind her. So, you know, you had to kind of think on your feet and, yeah, they videotaped all that and they wound up selecting mine. I mean, Justin, it's just the total, being in the right place at the right time. You know, it's been 32 years now and, you know, I just can't feel more, you know, happy and blessed and lucky, you know, to be able to do what I'm doing.
All the things you did in that process, I think they found the right guy.
Yeah. It's been great. Thanks.
To that end, like, it's one thing you see an anonymous mascot hiring thing and respond to it, and it turns out to be the Phillies of all things. It's crazy. But then also, this is going to segue to like how you and I connected originally a little while back.
Yeah.
So I early in quarantine made a podcast about Jackson Browne. My dad loves Jackson Browne. I grew up on it and I kind of took to it in my own way and just is like kind of felt to me like the kind of musician that I knew a lot about already and would look forward to the process of going in on like album by album, episode by episode, this kind of like fun little thing to do during this extremely weird time in our life. And so I start to do that. And like 4, 5, 6 episodes in, can't even remember, I get an email. The thing kind of caught more momentum than I really expected. You know, I was just going in for it was a thing that I liked and a cool process to try out. And then I get an email from Tom Burgoyne, who introduces himself as basically the Philly fanatic for the past 30 years. And I remember going to my wife and saying, like, the other 20-something teams in Major League Baseball, if one of their mascots sent it to me, I might have to, like, research who they are. Or I think I jokingly said I would just forward it to my junk or something, which is not true. But, you know. But it was to get this thing about a very, very nice note about Jackson Browne and this podcast from the Philly fanatic was one of the more amazing things. I was totally blown away by it. So I thank you for that.
That's awesome. And I think I told you, you know, how that came about and that it was during the pandemic. And so, you know, here I was, you know, there's no people were allowed at our games last year, of course, no fans. And, you know, I'm in an empty ballpark, you know, watching the ground crew, having a post-game beer just by myself. And then I would look so forward to getting into the car, and I live about an hour from the ballpark, you know, and it would be perfect. I would listen to every episode because I am a huge Jackson Browne fan. I'm top of the list, and I just enjoyed that podcast so much. So I had to reach out to you. I had to tell you what a great job you did.
I'm glad you did, not only because that kind of like energy is good when you're like doing a project like that. So it's like good, like kind of reinforcing, validating kind of thing, but also because it led to this conversation now. So I'm glad to have you on.
Awesome.
It sounds like you, the Fanatic, has had some encounters with musicians over the years, right?
Yeah. I guess. And it's, I love music. I love music, you know, I guess classic rock, if you want to call it that. That's, you know, my thing. But, I think the first time I ever really did something with the Fanatic, was at Vet Stadium. And it was the first time that Elton John and Billy Joel decided to tour together. And, I remember we were up in a suite and, it was intermission. And somebody turned to me and said, you know, Tom, you should go down there at the Fanatic and do something. And I, you know, I wasn't thinking that way. But once that bug was put in my ear, I'm like, oh, my gosh. Yeah. So I run down, put the costume on. I remember putting on like this, like a purple. It's kind of, I've used it as a Prince outfit. I've used it as a Jimi Hendrix outfit. But I, you know, for Elton John, it's kind of flamboyant, this thing that the Fanatic can put on. So I put that on and I leave the dressing room and there's one of the roadies is walking by and he goes, whoa, Philly Fanatic, what are you doing? I'm like, well, I want to get down there by the stage. He's like, here, I'll take you. So within like 2 minutes, I'm down there in the front row. The Fanatic is up there, you know, right at the front row. And it was at the point of the concert where Billy Joel plays an Elton song and Elton plays a Billy song. And at the time, Billy was playing Elton's Bitches Back, the Bitches Back. And he's at the piano and he looks down and he sees the Fanatic. He gets up from the piano, he grabs his microphone and he comes over and he shoves the microphone into the Fanatic's snout and is singing into the snout, you know? And, you know, it's like, whoa, you know, this is so cool.
I don't know if it was the same tour, but I did, went to school in Chicago for a year and I lived like in like Wrigleyville, like six blocks away from Wrigley Field. And I remember seeing a flyer for Elton John, Billy Joel show coming to Wrigley Field and knowing like, that's gotta be over $100 and I'm in school and I'm poor or whatever. And, but then one day, and you couldn't really, I was far enough away with city noise that I couldn't really hear Cubs games. I could maybe hear like the national anthem every once in a while. But then all of a sudden I'm sitting there and I hear, Crocodile. I was like in the distance, I hear the slight hum of Crocodile Rock. And then I was like, wait, that show is right now. And then I just got out and walked over to Wrigley Field and Wrigley Field is right there tucked in the middle of the city, nothing preventing you from like touching it basically. Right. And so I'm there with like thousands of people surrounding the whole perimeter of Wrigley Field singing Piano Man.
Nice.
It's one of the more surreal moments of my life.
It was and could hear it pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, it's the kind of thing that you hear more of the people there around you, but right. you can fully hear it. And not like being in there, but I don't know, definitely felt like one of those, like, this is, this moment feels special.
Buffett came to Citizens Bank Park. It was the first concert at Citizens Bank Park. This was 2005. And they had requested, I think somebody put the bug in there. You're like, hey, you know, if you want to have the Fanatic, Jimmy's always up for doing some fun stuff. So they said, yeah, you're going to run across the stage with some of the other, some of his backup singers. And it's Cheeseburger in Paradise. And we'll give you the bun. Like, I like mine with lettuce and tomato, you know. And so one of the girls had the lettuce, we had the tomato, the onion. And so that's the people, when the people saw the Fanatic, you know, they went crazy and ran across the stage a couple times. Then they were like, yo, you got to get back out there. They love you. So we wound up doing fins to the left, fins to the right. So the Fanatic is, you know, got everybody with fins to the left, fins to the right. And then a third, I'm getting ready to get off the stage. And they kept me out there for Brown Eyed Girl. And so, you know, it was crazy. And then the concert ends and they're like, can you be back here tomorrow? Because it's a 2-night, you know, run. I'm like, absolutely. So we did the exact same thing the next night.
Jimmy Buffett concert's like a whole scene, right? That's like a community, basically.
It really is. Yeah. Yeah. It's an event.
And so the Fanatic is a bird, but has fins and a snout. It's a very exotic bird.
Yeah, people wonder sometime, is he an aardvark, with that snout? But no, he's a flightless bird. Yeah, flightless.
I like that my Elton John, Billy Joel story is standing outside of a stadium where you can kind of hear, and yours is literally having Billy Joel's microphone shoved into your snout.
Well, Justin, because I know you like music so much, I have to tell you, it doesn't always work out. And it was the night I had a little run-in with our friend Bruce Springsteen, who, if Jackson Brown is my number one, Bruce is probably my 1A. And nice. Bruce was playing a series of shows in Philadelphia in 1999, and the last show was canceled because of actually a hurricane. There was a hurricane in Philadelphia, and so they canceled the show. He comes back a few months later and plays One Night Only, not at the Wells Fargo Center, but the old Spectrum. So One Night Only at the Spectrum in September of 99. It was a day of a game, a night of a game, and the Vet, that stadium is right next to the Spectrum. So every game, the Fanatic goes out and does a routine on the field in the fifth inning on his little ATV, does something, and then leaves the field. Well, that particular night, Fanatic does his fifth inning routine, leaves the field right up the truck ramp, and cruises right over to the across the street to the Spectrum.
On the ATV.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, driving around across the street. The guards see the Fanatic. Hey, Fanatic, come on in. And literally within a minute, the Fanatic is down there in row one, banging his head on the stage and leading everybody, fist pumping and going nuts. Well, the problem was apparently somebody from the Phillies had called like the week before and asked if they wanted to have the Fanatic there. And they had declined. Somebody from the Spectrum had declined, like, thanks, but no thanks. But the Fanatic, as we like to say, Justin, didn't get the memo. And so it turns out Bruce, I totally think Bruce would have been into it, if it was Glory Days or, Dancing in the Dark or something, up tempo, but he was in the middle of the song Murder Incorporated.
Oh my God.
Which is Bruce at his, serious Bruce best. And so, it didn't. So Bruce wasn't really thrilled, I don't think. And next thing you know, the guy who had told the Fanatic they didn't want him is now down in the front row, kind of yelling at the Fanatic in front of 18,000 people.
Jesus.
And escorted the Fanatic out of the Spectrum. But the Fanatic got high-fived all the way out. People were like totally pumped to see the Fanatic,
Yeah, that's good. You made some people happy that night.
Absolutely.
You're gonna win some, you're gonna lose some, I wanted to ask about last year. You talked about it for a second, but the feeling of being there last year in an empty stadium with, I assume Philadelphia had cardboard cutouts like a lot of places.
Yeah, we did.
And then now coming back, tell us about it. I mean, a mascot, it's like a unique thing to think about. It's part of a baseball experience, but it's a part of a baseball experience entirely tied to the fans in the stadium.
Correct. I mean, to not have fans, mascot's job is kind of made irrelevant to some extent. I did take it as kind of a challenge creatively, we got to have some fun, and what can we do with these cardboard cutouts, and what can you do in an empty ballpark? You can kind of go anywhere. The Fanatic gets mobbed everywhere he goes, and in the ballpark, it's tough to get around because, you're posing for pictures and everybody wants a selfie or, high five and, it's all good. But in an empty ballpark, it's like, okay, we can kind of go wherever. So yeah, one night I think that, the Fanatic climbed up on top of the batter's eye, the big brick wall. It's about, 25, 30 feet up in the air and just was hanging out. And the Fanatic picked a bunch of, different parts of the ballpark to go to and tried to entertain the cardboard cutouts, Justin, They were a little stiff.
Did the Fanatic use the little tongue to buff the heads of bald-headed cardboard cutouts?
The key was kind of talking to our broadcast because unless it's on camera, I literally would have been there just entertaining myself.
At some point, you're going to teeter into like psychosis.
Exactly. So it worked out well. We kind of made sure, if I was going to do something, outrageous, or the Fanatic was going to do something outrageous, that, we capture it. And they did, would show it during our broadcast, and it was fun. It was a weird thing to go through. I'm really keeping my fingers crossed that we never have to do that again, because the game needs fans. It's just so much better, obviously, this year. Phillies are in the race, and the fans are into it, and it's not even close. You know, just we got to have a full ballpark. You know, an empty ballpark is no good.
Totally. Am I allowed to ask how the little tongue works, or is that proprietary biological information?
Yeah, we'd have to kill you, Justin.
I understand. I understand that. I love that little tongue. It's funny. So you talked about some musicians you met and stuff like that. How did has the Fanatic met Jackson Browne, or has Tom Burgoyne met Jackson Browne?
Yeah, I have. The Fanatic has not. I've met him four times, and it's been all great. The first time I remember was at the Spectrum. He was opening up for Tom Petty. I was with some folks who we had a couple backstage. I didn't have a backstage pass, but one of the people didn't show up. She was one of the DJs. We were with another, like a TV guy, and she didn't show up. And my friend said, "Tom, you love Jackson Browne. You want to go down and, you know, backstage?" And I'm like, you know, this is how much of a fan I'm. I said, "Jackson was just in California last night. He doesn't want to, you know, he doesn't want to do anything backstage. Let him get some rest." You know, my friend looked at me. He's like, "What?" I'm like, "Okay, yeah, you're right. What am I saying?" You know, but, and that was the first time I met him. And usually, you know, I guess being in baseball all these years, Justin, you know, I've met all my sports heroes, and I've met a lot of music people, and I'm pretty comfortable around them. And yeah, but meeting Jackson for the first time, of course, he couldn't have been nicer. And but I do remember saying, it was I love your new disc. It was the Naked Ride Home he had just come out with. But, and I know he's an album guy. He's, you know, he likes, you know, albums and CDs, and I don't think he's a big fan. So, but I said, "I love your new disc." And as soon as I said it, it sounded so stupid, you know. But I got a chance to redeem myself, because a few years later, he's in Philadelphia getting ready for a show at the Tower Theater. I caught wind that some of his roadies and a couple of guys in the band wanted to come to a game. And so I set them all up with tickets. We had about 10 of their group. I got them all in the field. For batting practice, I had our photographer come over and get a photo of all the guys with me. I was in the picture. And then the next night was the concert. And I was just so psyched that I was like, "Oh, this is great." And so I went out and I had those pictures made. I printed the pictures. I put them all in frames. They had invited me to the show and said, "Hey, you know, you want to come, you know, hang out before the show?" And absolutely, I got a chance to bring two of my brothers who turned me on to Jackson Browne. So here we are. We show up the back door at the Tower. I got this big sack of, you know, free Philly stuff along with these pictures that I got a chance to give out to everybody. But they let us hang out, just me and my brothers, for the sound check at the Tower Theater. David Lindley was with Jackson at the time, so it was just David and Jackson going through some songs. And then we go downstairs. And it's before the show, and they have the spread of food, and Jackson comes over. I give him a framed picture of the Philly Fanatic wearing a Senorita dress, and I signed it Linda Paloma Fanatic. You'll get this reference. Maybe some of your other folks won't get the reference. Linda Paloma. Done a routine for the band the night before. The Fanatic put that dress on, and we thank Linda Paloma, you know, on the PA system. They're like, "And there she goes, Linda Paloma Fanatic." You know? So I signed it to Jackson, and he goes, "Oh, I'll put this right next to my Stevie Ray Vaughan picture in my studio."
What a perfect detail that is.
Yeah, I know. It really was. So anyway, we get ready to go, and he goes, "Hey, do you guys want to hang out and eat?" And again, my first words are, no, we don't want to bother you anymore, Jackson." My brother goes, "Yeah, we'll eat." So Jackson goes up to the table. He gets, we're having blackened catfish and something else. He makes himself a platter. He goes over to a table. I'm behind him. I put a little platter together. I go to another table because I'm thinking I don't want to bother Jackson. He was nice enough. So Kevin McCormick, his bass player, came over, sat with us, my brothers. And Jackson gets up from his table, walks over, and plops his plate right down next to me, and we have dinner with Jackson Brown. It was really cool.
Well, my buddy Ryan, I live on Orcas Island. My buddy Ryan, who was a guest, he was on the For Everyman episode of After the Deluge, and we want to come out to Philadelphia, maybe. And if we come out to Philadelphia, we'll hit you up. Maybe next baseball season.
Absolutely. Justin, I'll roll out the red carpet for you.
Oh, my God. I love it. I want to give the Philly fanatic a hug. That just sounds pleasant. It just seems pleasant.
A bro hug.
Yeah, exactly. So the way we do this, you people heard a little bit of a song as your kind of walk-up music as the fanatic stepped up to the plate. What song did we hear?
Take It Easy, the Jackson Brown version. You know, as you know, the story has been well told. You know, it's Jackson's song. Glenn Frey helped him finish it. The Eagles made it a hit, and I personally prefer Jackson's version. But I figured since I was coming on your podcast, as much as I love Glory Days and getting kicked out of a Bruce concert, it had to be Take It Easy. The Fanatic is very chill, you know, so that song is chill.
And Fanatic seems like some pretty chill company to keep. Keep the mood light and loose. Tom and or Philly Fanatic, where can people find you in terms of whether it's social media or a project you have or anything?
Yeah, well, I have a few things. Well, I've written a lot of books, kids' books, and I've also written some books about the Phillies. Another book I wrote, now it's been 5 years, called Feel the Love. And it's a business leadership book. It's a lot of Philly Fanatic stories, but it's kind of all about the love people have for the Fanatic. And wouldn't it be something if, you know, people loved your company or your service or you as much as people have this love for the Fanatic? It's been great, you know, being the Fanatic all these years. It's a lot of experiences. It's opened a lot of doors. I really do enjoy telling my stories. And this last book, Feel the Love, I wrote it with a guy who's a corporate executive. We've had a great time bringing our message to kind of folks in the business world. So I'm open to head out and do some more talking.
Well, I am glad I got the chance to talk to you today.
Justin, really my pleasure. Again, I think you're doing a great job. Love your podcasts and keep up the good work, really.
Yeah. And as of 2008, congratulations on being a champion. It was Utley, Howard, Rollins, and you.
And the Fanatic. Let's do it again in 2021, shall we?
I know, they're doing well, huh?
Yeah, we're right on the Mets' tail. I think we're only, as of this recording, we're a game and a half back. So let's see what happens.
They got a pretty good mascot going on over there, too.
Mr. Met is legendary.
Mets, Mr. Met's legendary also. Rate the show, review the show, tell people about it. Find me on Twitter at @RoutineLayup. Email me pitch and guest ideas at andthepitchpodcast@gmail.com. See you next week. Don't even try to